Blog Talk Radio.
Your boy, it just got really hot in the studio. I don't know why. That is strange, but I have an awesome show for you. Feeling good, man. Feeling good. A lot of stuff to get to. So, Hillary Clinton, what's she up to nowadays? Same old shit. And by that I mean she cannot separate herself from big money donors because apparently it's just it's in her DNA. She cannot leave big money donors alone. We have the CEO of Time Warner exposing himself as a massive asshole and basically admitting everything that's wrong with politics in a casual opinion that he laid out there for us. So I have a lot to say about that story. We have Van Jones has a new CNN show. He spoke to some former Obama voters who turned into Trump voters. That's fascinating to me, and you get to learn in their own words why they did what they did. And later on in the show, we got some Pat Robertson. Pat Robertson defended the pick of Ben Carson to lead the Department of Housing and Urban Development. So get ready for that one, because he's going to use some classic Pat Robertson arguments. All right, so let's get started here, and let's start with Hillary Clinton and what she's up to. I imagine that sooner rather than later, there's going to be like no more Hillary Clinton stories, so you guys can, you'll be happy about that. But the downside is it's nothing but Trump stories. All right, here we go. The Hill and the New York Post have one of the most pathetic post-election stories here for us. They say Democrats, Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine are planning a thank you party next week for those who donated millions to their presidential campaign. The party at the Plaza Hotel's Grand Ballroom on December 15th is expected to feature fashion icon Anna Wintour, probably mispronouncing that, investor Alan Patricoff, and hedge fund manager Mark Lasry, and more. I really can't figure out why the Democrats lost. It's so elusive. Why, oh, why did they lose? Maybe this is exactly why you lost. So understand, it's not like Hillary Clinton decided, here's what we'll do. We're going to get together with a bunch of union workers, a bunch of waitresses who make minimum wage. We're going to get together with a bunch of construction guys because they're the heart and soul of America, some people who lost their factory jobs. You know, we're going to get together with some civil rights protesters. And we're going to say, oh, thank you for all the help and how much you fought for me. And understand I'm still on your side and I'll still fight to this day. They're not doing that. You want to know why? Shocker, Hillary Clinton does not give a fuck about those people. She cares about her donors. Now, contrast this with what Bernie Sanders has been doing post the election. He went to Standing Rock. Bernie went to Standing Rock, where it's about 300 below zero. And he stood out there, and he made a speech thanking Native Americans, thanking all the activists, thanking the water protectors, and saying how you guys are the future, you guys are the movement, you guys are important, and we're going to change the world together, and we're going to change it for the better. What's Hillary Clinton doing? I just told you. Let's meet with our donors in the Plaza Hotel's Grand Ballroom and talk about how rich we are, and talk about how oh, I love that you gave me $200,000 for my super PAC at this time, and thank you so much for doing it that time. And it's gross, man. It's gross. And we know that the conversations that are going to be going on, just like with David Brock, how David Brock said, I'm going to meet with George Soros and a bunch of billionaires because we're going to take down Trump. It's like, no, dipshit. The fact that you're meeting with the billionaires to do that is the problem. So you're going to have a room full of elites here patting Hillary Clinton on the back, and they're all going to be saying, well, you know, now we start from scratch and we rebuild, and then we'll beat Trump. No, you guys are now out of the process. I want to hear nothing from any of you. You guys are the goddamn problem. You know, I gave this analogy the other day, but it's like somebody comes and robs you while you're sleeping. You wake up the next morning and see that everything got robbed. Then you have somebody knock on your door. It's a neighbor of yours. You see them wearing one of the bracelets or something that was stolen, and they go, well, man, we got to rebuild. I got to help you out here. How can I help? Wait, what? No, you were the problem. I'm calling the cops, bitch. It's the same thing with this. You guys were the destruction of the Democratic Party. You couldn't beat a guy who said, I grabbed them by their pussy. I don't even wait. You couldn't beat a guy who had a 63% unfavorable rating during the general election. I mean, he was a reality show buffoon, a fake billionaire. He went bankrupt 6 times but ran on his business record. You couldn't beat him. And now you're coming back around and saying, well, look, now it's time for, let's all sit down and figure this out. No, there's this thing called empirical reality. And that has demonstrated you guys are the last people to be able to weigh in on this and have your opinion taken seriously. So it's like you just flunked the easiest math test in the world, and then you come to me the next day and say, I'm applying for the job of math teacher. No, 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 go away, go away, go away. And they just don't get it. Understand, like, I don't even think that, so The Hill reported on this. Let's say somebody who was in Hillary Clinton's inner circle saw that The Hill reported on this. I don't even think they're cognizant enough of the mood in the country and the reality on the ground that they would even be ashamed. Like, you should be ashamed. You should think, oh my God, oh, that leaked, it leaked that I'm meeting, it, you know, in a ritzy ballroom with millionaire donors and elites. Ugh, I don't want people to know that that's what I'm doing post-election. But they're so disconnected that they might just be like, yeah, oh, it leaked. Okay, cool. You know, whatever. No, but see, that makes us not like you. We don't like you. And we don't like you because those are the people you represent. Those are the people you care about. And this is why, you know, white working class people really, really, really went against you. And the Democratic firewall fell. These were states that were supposed to easily go Democratic. But they didn't because the Rust Belt said, well, you know, you're the problem. Your husband signed NAFTA. You supported NAFTA. You haven't been strongly against TPP during this whole campaign. Trump brings it up every speech. Whatever. You know, we're going for him. So apparently you don't learn and you never learn and you're fine with that, but you still want to have control. This isn't a conversation. This isn't a debate. Go sit outside. You're done. Okay. Now, we move along. Oh, and also Tim Kaine. Tim Kaine is going to be with her. Tim, I know, like, people have been making you feel real good lately and telling you, like, oh, you're the future hope for the party. Well, number one, you're not. Number two, are your political instincts that bad that you don't realize that maybe going to a party with millionaires and thanking them for all the money they gave you is not the way to do it? Like, to the extent you were in the conversation, which you weren't, only among elites, well, now you're definitely not in the conversation. Nobody's interested in your nonsense. You're the world's most boring man, and apparently you're also totally cool with the corruption. I mean, look, we know that already. He was pro-TPP. So, all right, let me continue here. And we'll go to a CEO who's just as loathsome as these characters. Time Warner chairman and CEO Jeff Bukes spoke to Business Insider about Donald Trump. And this guy exposed himself as a complete and utter asshole. So when first asked about the threat Trump poses to the First Amendment, here's what he said. I don't think that's a thing. I think the threat to the First Amendment came more from the Democratic side. Campaign finance reform would restrain multiple voices. I think the press viewed it charitably as something cleaning up money in politics. Okay, now, let's address a few things here. So when it comes to Trump being a threat to the First Amendment, to say that's not a thing means you're ignorant, because it's clearly a thing. He's shouting it from the rooftops. He just said the other day, maybe we should take away people's citizenship or throw them in jail for a year when it comes to flag burning. He created a media blacklist on the campaign trail where he said, look, if you cover me unfavorably, you're done. We're not even going to give you press credentials so that you can cover me. So it's only people who give him favorable coverage that were able to cover him. He sued Bill Maher over a joke. He sued The Onion over a satire article. He recently said he wants to open up the libel laws. He said that he would love it if our speech laws in the U.S. were more like England, where they're much more restrictive. So it's not a question. It's not like, hey, what's your opinion on this? We know he's very restrictive when it comes to speech, based on what he said, based on what he's done, based on his record. So that's first things first. Now, the second thing is, his argument is, no, the real threat to speech is coming from the Democrats, because the Democrats want to do campaign finance reform. All right, now, first of all, he can relax, because they don't. The Democrats, as far as they go, is saying, let's repeal Citizens United. Repealing Citizens United is nonsense, because that's not enough. That's window dressing. That's a way to address the problem without actually addressing the problem and basically putting the liberal base to sleep and saying, oh, see, we did reform. Now shut the fuck up and move along. Because if you repeal Citizens United, what happens? You still have money in politics. You just have slightly less money in politics. So you bring back some of the rules, and, the rules were already mangled. So Citizens United shot a dead horse, because you have other cases from the late 1970s and onward that made it so that money in politics was already a scourge. So the Democrats don't even really want to do it. Let's be clear about that. But second of all, to the extent that campaign finance reform is restricting free speech, it's not. That's a totally made-up argument from corporate think tanks. So somebody was smart enough to come up with this, where they said, I don't know, how can we make it like a non-negotiable thing when it comes to us buying the government? Rich people making this an oligarchy and a kleptocracy. They said, I got an idea. How about we just say that money equals speech, so if you restrict me from buying our politicians and corrupting the system and buying special favors, well, then you don't believe in the Constitution. How about that? And they ran with it. And that argument either duped over a bunch of idiot judges, or the judges were in on it and they were like, okay, yeah, we know this is a bullshit argument, but we want our buddies to buy the government too, so go right ahead. So think about that, because let's take their logic and extrapolate here. They say money equals speech. Money equals speech. So therefore, any expression with money, any financial interaction is speech. That's not what I'm saying, that's what you're saying. So by that logic, shouldn't prostitution be legal? But not only legal, unconstitutional to have laws against it. Because me giving money to a hooker is just me saying, this isn't prostitution, I'm not soliciting sex here. No, this is me saying, expressing speech, because I'm giving her money as to how much I love blowjobs. Now, again, that sounds ridiculous, right? Because it is. But that's the argument they're making. By their logic, why shouldn't I be able to go to the local crystal meth dealer and give him a speech? And then they say, whoa, are you buying drugs? I go, no, you're misunderstanding. It's not me buying drugs. I'm expressing with speech. This is my speech that says crystal meth is awesome. It's totally legal to say crystal meth is awesome. How about murder for hire? Money equals speech, right? So it's totally legal to say, I'm okay with murder. That's a legal thing to say. You could say that. Now, it's illegal to do direct threats of violence, so you can't say, I'm going to murder Ted at 3:32 a.m. on Wednesday. But you can say, yeah, I'm okay with murder. Well, by their logic, if I give money to a hired gun, like, what are you doing? That's illegal. You can't do that. What do you mean it's illegal? I don't know what you're talking about. This is me just expressing speech, giving a hitman money, but it's just me expressing speech as to how much I love murder and how cool with it I am. Again, with all those arguments, you go, Kyle, that is the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard. Why is it any different for political corruption? By the way, if money equals speech, then by definition, the richer people in a so-called democracy have a louder voice, and that's fundamentally against one man, one vote. So it would be unconstitutional on that front. So if all the rich people have a louder voice in a democracy, then it is not a democracy. It is an oligarchy. It is a kleptocracy. It is a plutocracy. Government of, by, and for the rich. So this argument falls apart just at face value, doing like a simple, you know, run through of the logic of it. It just totally falls apart. But it's the argument that won. And it won because of assholes like this. Now, isn't it weird? The Time Warner chairman and CEO, you know, he's the that's the parent company of CNN. You know who's a big beneficiary of money in politics? CNN. Because what happens? All that money spent by the super PAC, spent by the campaigns, a lot of it goes in the form of ads. Ads that run on mainstream media. So he loves money in politics. He gets rich off it. So he has, a massive incentive to say, oh, yeah, the Democrats are restricting speech. But look, man, in your heart of hearts, you know that ain't speech. And you know the effects of it. We've seen the effects of it. There was the Princeton study that found that there's little to no correlation between what the people want and the policies we end up getting. But where is there a very good correlation? What the donor class wants and what we end up getting. Because, again, they give money to the politicians, so the politicians do favors for them all day long, give them sweetheart deals all day long. And who are they snubbing and ignoring and not carrying out the will of as they do favors for their donors? The American people. So the CEO of Time Warner says, rock and roll, I'm all for that, man. And they're going to smear actual liberals in the meantime and say, oh, I mean, these guys are the problem, right? These are the ones who don't believe in free speech. No, the problem is that you believe in oligarchy, and you want to mask that by claiming your detractors don't believe in the Constitution and don't believe in free speech. You don't believe in free speech because you don't believe in equality under the law. You don't believe in one man, one vote. You believe that rich people should have a much bigger say in the direction of the country because you're rich. So here's your mainstream media right here. The guy who's the CEO of Time Warner, which owns CNN, saying money in politics is awesome, and that's the way it should be. What media are you going to listen to? You going to listen to us? We're fucking crowdfunding. We're crowdfunding right now, son. There's a new studio I'm in here. We got to pay for it. So, by the way, side point. GoFundMe.com/secular talk. It went down for like a few days, but now it's back up. We're trying to hit our goal of 100,000. I think we're around 94,000 or so right now. We got, I don't know, maybe a few weeks left in this fundraiser. We do that because we're beholden to you. The audience, you guys are my boss. He doesn't view it like that. He views it as I'm the head honcho, and I think that money should rule the day. And look at that, I'm rich. So I get to, you know, smear my opponents as not believing in free speech, even though the reality is I'm the one who believes in oligarchy, and it's just a shield to get away with that. So there's a fundamental difference between many new media outlets and old media outlets. And at this point, they're wearing it on their sleeve. That's the main point here. They're wearing it on their sleeve. He's saying, yeah, enough with the facade. Back in the day, you at least had to pretend that, you know, hey, we're not corrupt. We actually care about the people, and we want, like, the integrity of the democratic system. Now they're like, money's free speech, and I should be able to buy whatever politician I want, and you need to shut the fuck up about it. We're not going to shut the fuck up about it. We're the new media, and we're here to fight back, and we're here to stick to principles. Okay. All right, now let's go to Van Jones. He's got a new show. So far, it's pretty good, I must say. I have a strict fuck CNN policy here at Secular Talk, and I just did a story of the CEO of Time Warner, which owns CNN. But every now and then, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and then. Broken clock is right twice a day, as they used to say. Okay, here we go. Van Jones has a new CNN show, and he did an interesting segment here where he spoke to Obama voters who turned to Trump in 2016. Let's see what they had to say.
Let me introduce to you a family of two-time Obama voters who switched in 2016 to vote for Donald Trump. Take a look. Trumbull County. Farmland and factories dominate the landscape, and union Democrats dominate local politics. But over the last 40 years, well, hell, actually, the last 4 years, especially Obama's second term, industry has been hit hard. Many steel mills, manufacturing plants have been closed, and thousands of jobs have been lost. I'm invited to dinner with a family of Trump supporters to talk politics.
Hello. How are you?
Scott Seitz is a lifelong Democrat who voted for Obama twice. Cameron, his only son who was old enough to vote in the last election, also supported Obama. This year, all four Seitz men voted for Trump.
What did you like about Obama? And then what did you like about Trump?
I think Obama represents a lot of love. And I think that he's a good man, and he did all he could. And we supported him for two elections.
Yeah.
And then when those changes really didn't come about, and Obamacare actually affected me personally with my own mother, I think we needed a change once again.
Mm-hmm.
Trump seemed to come through here, and he's speaking change again. So I think we still voted for change.
You want to get in?
I went vote for either one.
So you voted for a Democrat all the way down, but could not vote for Hillary Clinton?
No. It was just her morals and his morals. I just, no. They both scared me.
So let me give you guys a chance to respond to some of the stereotypes about all the Trump voters. All the Trump voters hate the Mexicans. They hate Muslims. They don't like black people. They're just, it was all the explosive kind of racial talk was what really got everybody going.
One of my jobs is helping counseling individuals recovering from drug and alcohol addictions, and I'm just going by the statistics at my location. Most of them are minorities. I would probably go as far as to say 80-85%. So, you know, if that were the case, and if I was racist, then I just don't believe that I'd be very good at my job. But I'm not the stereotype that individuals think we are.
So how does a billionaire, I mean, you guys are serious, like the working class backbone of America and the industrial heartland. How does a billionaire break through to the blue collar work?
We put Democrats in office, and she turned around and forgot completely about us. We are what makes this world go round. We built the tanks and bombs that won these countries' wars, and for you to come through here and completely neglect us, we would have rather vote for anybody instead of her. And all the other stuff that Donald said didn't seem to make a hill of beans. She hurt us. And that's what it is.
What a racist. Ugh. What a fucking misogynist. He sounds like he despises Muslims, let me tell you. Okay, look, I don't mean to be flippant, because the reality is, sure, there are many Donald Trump supporters who did vote for him because of those horrific, grotesque, bigoted things he said. I'm not downplaying that. All I'm saying is, there are other people who voted for him who did not vote for him because of that gross shit he said. They voted for him despite that. They overlooked that and thought, exactly what he just said, we voted for change. We voted for change with Obama. They voted for Obama twice. But now we voted for Trump. Why? Because he didn't do anything for us, and Trump is saying, I'm going to change things. Now, understand, that's not the case for everybody. So, yeah, Obama did do things for many people. If you're somebody who had a pre-existing condition and couldn't get health insurance, now you can. Well, yeah, he made your life a lot better. If you were somebody who made $42,000 a year, and Obama changes so that you now get overtime pay, and before you didn't, he affected your life for the better. But if you're somebody whose factory got, you know, it shut down and the job shipped overseas under Obama, and, you know, meanwhile he's pushing for TPP and pushing for even worse trade deals that would make it so we lose even more jobs, well, then Obama didn't really help you on that front now, did he? So it's different things for different people. But the reality is, what they're saying is true. It is true that the in the Rust Belt, these old factory towns, they're struggling. It is true that the Democrats have used these voters to get elected and then haven't done dick for them. And then that leads to the next point. He went on to say, quote, she completely forgot about us. Who can argue against that? I mean, Bill Clinton voted for NAFTA. She vocally supported NAFTA. She pushed for TPP 45 times and called it the gold standard. You know, she voted for the, what is it, CAFTA? I believe it was CAFTA, yeah. So she's been in favor of most of these free trade agreements. And again, that's the heart of the issue for these people. So she did forget about them. And then he goes on to say, the thing that hit home the most for me is, he says, all the other things that Trump said didn't seem to amount to a hill of beans. So in other words, all the time, like when Trump said TPP is going to rape us, and the media went on for 3 days about he used the word rape in an offensive context. When they ran the ads of him saying, him cursing, him giving a CPAC speech and saying, fuck him, you know, just being a general foul-mouthed kind of dude. And then they portray that as, how are you going to vote for him? How are you going to vote for him? He uses bad language. I don't know how you're going to vote for him. He goes, that didn't amount to anything to me because that's bullshit, fake outrage. We're struggling over here. And this guy went out there and at least pretended to give a fuck. Whereas Hillary Clinton, what was the central theme of her campaign? What was it? Break down the barriers, stronger together. Those were vague things. And America is already great. So hold on. That's going to be your counter-argument when he says make America great again? You're going to say America is already great? What message does that send? Hey, man, America's already great, so why don't we just keep going on the same path that we're going on right now and just acknowledge how awesome it is? How is that message going to resonate with somebody whose life is in shambles because their jobs got shipped overseas? They're going to say, I certainly don't feel like America's already great. So they're too caught up in their corporatist, democratic, elite bubble. Because they look around, everybody they know is doing fantastic. They're doing really well. You know, under Obama, he's done many good things. I don't want you guys to get me wrong here. But, you know, their main indicator of how well average Americans are doing, the unemployment rate and the stock market. Two of the worst indicators for how average Americans are actually doing. The stock market is a reflection of how the richest of the rich Americans are doing. And the unemployment rate just tells you fewer people are unemployed, which is a good thing. But it's not the end-all be-all, because, for example, higher-wage jobs were replaced with lower-wage jobs post the recession. So though more people are employed, they're underemployed, too. There are people who are underemployed. So they're getting jobs that are shitty jobs that they're not happy at. So these aren't good indicators, but the Democrats were so caught in their own elitist bubble that they're like, well, what do you mean? What do you want? The fucking stock market's doing great. Oh, my rich buddies tell me they're doing awesome. And the unemployment rate's down. So get over it. We're better than Bush. Yeah, you're better than Bush. That's not saying much. That motherfucker gets a F minus minus minus. So what, you want a pat on the back for a D? So understand, man, if the Democrats want to ignore guys like this, okay, keep losing. Keep fucking losing. Keep fucking losing. By the way, whose message would resonate with a guy like this? I wonder. If only there was another Democrat in the race who actually gave a shit about factory jobs and actually gave a shit about infrastructure and actually gave a shit about everybody in the country. There was. And the Democrats did everything they could to make sure he didn't get the nomination. Because Hillary's more electable. Hillary's more electable. Hillary's more electable. How the fuck did that work out for you? And now the same people that made the shitty predictions then are the ones who are trying to tell us which direction the party should go in now. Not on my watch, bitch. Not on my watch. Okay. Break time, break time. When we come back, President Obama gave a speech about war, and man, was it bad. No, I'm not. I didn't see the whole thing. I'm not gonna lie to you guys, but it was. The parts I saw were good, googly moogly. Hey, by the way, on yesterday's show, so I did that little online poll, and I said, Some people are saying the brightness of the screen on YouTube is just too much. It was too bright. Should I, like, lighten it a little bit with these giant studio lights? And I think 50-something percent, so a majority said, yeah, lighten it. It's a little too bright. So yesterday's show, I don't know if anybody noticed, but yesterday's show I did that. What happened is the lights to the right and the left of me are still as they always were, but the one in front of me is lowered more. So curious if you guys even noticed the difference, and if you did, is it good, is it bad? So you tell me. All right, now, let's continue here. President Obama gave a national security speech. And, man, may you tell me if I'm overreacting. I don't think I am, but you'll see what's up here and why I was feeling iffy about this. President Obama gave a national security speech at an Air Force base, and there was a genuine bone-chilling, unsettling moment that I want to share with you guys. Let's watch, and then we'll discuss.
Let me introduce to you a family of two.
Wrong one, bitch. All right, where is it? Hold on. Trying to find it. Trying to find it. Do, 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 do. Okay, I got it.
As you know all too well, your mission and the course of history was changed after the 9/11 attacks. By the time I took office, the United States had been at war for 7 years. For 8 years that I've been in office, there has not been a day when a terrorist organization or some radicalized individual was not plotting to kill Americans. And on January 20th, I will become the first president of the United States to serve two full terms during a time of war.
Okay, reacting here. That's not a time to clap. What the fuck was that? I will be the first sitting president to have two full terms at war. And they clap. He's at an Air Force base. So those are people who are serving. Okay, I don't think I'm overreacting, not only because of what you just saw, but also because the White House, the official White House account, tweeted that out in quotes as if it was something to brag about. Guys, what is going on? Like, that, if that was a Republican president, if George W. Bush had said that, and then they were bragging about it on the Twitter account, and there was, explosive applause in the room. Wouldn't all of us say, like, what is wrong with you savages, you barbarians, you imperialists who are proud of it? And it's not, like, I feel like they've even given up the pretext of we're doing it to defend against imminent attack against the nation. Like that, you used to have to make a case that that was going to happen, even if it was bullshit, in order to muster up people enough to say, okay, let's go to war. We got to do what we got to do. We got to protect the country. Now it's like they've given up on that. They're like, don't even bother doing the bullshit to try to make people feel like we got to do it. Now you just do it. Now you do it. You have bullshit reasons, and then you turn around and you say, in a speech, I'll be the first president to sit two full terms at war. Everybody cheers. It reminds me of the Star Wars scene. Like, that's how liberty dies, with thunderous applause. I mean, this is Orwell 101. It's taken over. Now people respond to the idea of perpetual war as if Obama just said, we spent two full terms not at war. We've had peace for two full terms. Okay, that would be an applause line. Yes! Peace! No war! Wonderful! Now he says the opposite. We've been at war two full terms. People are like, yes! Oh, war! How does that make the U.S. look to the rest of the world, by the way? How does that make it, I mean, for all of our talk about upholding human rights, civil liberties, values, how does that make everybody else in the world going to look at that and go, they're fucking cheering war? Endless war? Endless war. The war in Afghanistan started in 2001. It's 2016, bitch. We're still there. There's no, like, there's not even a defined, like, oh, once we do X, Y, and Z, then we get out. It's just, no, we're there. We're in Afghanistan. And that's what it is. Now it's just perpetual, endless war, and nobody says anything about it, and the news doesn't fucking cover it. I'd love to see somebody do a report and, you know, go back and track it. How many days did CNN go and the mainstream media go without even mentioning the fact that we still have two full-scale wars going on, one in Afghanistan, one in Iraq? How many days? We're at war. We're two wars. And the media's like, oh, it doesn't even make the fucking news. Don't even cover it. Don't even cover it. Did you see Donald Trump's tweet? He tweeted something. Not to mention the seven interventions. I'm talking about the two wars. But then you also got to factor in the countries where they're doing just drone strikes. You got to factor in the countries where they're doing traditional airstrikes. You got to factor in the places where they're special ops boots on the ground. But don't call them boots on the ground. They're just special ops. And I also love another Orwellian trick. Yes, we just drone strike Yemen, but that's not an act of war. Oh, really? So if China drone bombs, I don't know, a white supremacist enclave in Mississippi, and they turn around and go, no, it's cool, America, don't worry. It wasn't an act of war, even though we drone bombed Mississippi. Will we accept that argument? It was just a little droning, and then they got out. They droned, and then they went and grabbed a sandwich. No, we'd say, are you fucking mental? No, of course that's an act of war. So we are doing it in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Libya. Anyways, liberal democratic president, he promised peace, but now we're going to cheer when he says, I've been at war for two full terms. That's nothing to fucking brag about. That's disgusting. We have 800 military bases in 70 countries, and it costs us $100 billion a year to maintain. Flint, Michigan doesn't have clean water. You think maybe we could use some of those resources to, I don't know, make sure our people don't die? It's a wacky idea, I know. Our infrastructure gets a grade of D. The war in Iraq, when all is said and done by the year 2053, and you include the interest and everything, will cost $7 trillion. So you have all the money ever for that. But it's a common thing that, you know, people will bring up in the House and the Senate, when you talk about a program to help poor people, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. No, I don't know where we're going to get the money. The numbers don't work. I mean, don't be crazy. Don't be stupid. So it's the patriotic thing to cheer endless war, but it's unpatriotic to say, hey, maybe we should feed our kids. Maybe if somebody's struggling and they're living in poverty, maybe we should address that. No, you need to suck it up and accept the fact that 50% of Americans make $30,000 a year or less. Accept the fact that 76% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. Accept the fact that income inequality is at record heights. Accept the fact that the government is now owned by the rich. We have an oligarchy. We have a kleptocracy. Accept that, and you better cheer when the supposedly liberal Democratic president says, we've been at war for two full terms. Again, imagine a Republican says that. Imagine Donald Trump after, let's just say, fast forward, assume he gets 8 years, assume he's been doing the same thing as Obama the whole time, endless war. And he said that?
We've been at war for 8 years. Tremendous. Let me just tell you. Believe me. We've been at war for 8 years. Believe me.
How would the left react? What the? Are you bragging about war? And motherfucker, this ain't no damn World War II. This isn't like
existential threat to the U.S.
This is, oh, you started the war on terror in 2001, and today there are more terrorists. You've been fighting the whole time. Now there are more of them. That's like getting involved in World War II, and then at the end of World War II, oh, look at that, there's more Nazis. Now we have two Hitlers. So understand it's been counterproductive. And because you killed so many civilians that you radicalized the family members and the friends of those civilians who you killed. Counterproductive, immoral, unethical, wrong, wrong, and people cheer. Yeah, that's what it is, what we do. We do endless war, and you should cheer for that. I'm imagining a speech in Iran, you know, the Grand Ayatollah.
We've been at war for 8 straight years. Ah, yes.
U.S. media would paint that immediately. Iranian savages. Look at these savage, unenlightened assholes. Are you kidding me? This is 2016. That's how you're going to react to the news of endless war? You're going to fucking cheer? You're that tribalistic? Is that what it is? You shut off your mind that much? But in the U.S., that's what it is, man. American exceptionalism. We're, by the way, American exceptionalism, what is that notion? Think about it. We like to say two things at once. One thing is we're everybody's equal. We're the world police because we want to treat everybody equally and everybody has human rights. They say that, and then the next breath they say American exceptionalism. What is American exceptionalism? What does exceptional mean? It means better than. It means supreme. So maybe another term for it is American supremacist, which is exactly the ideology of the neocons, which is why they were so grotesque. But now you have even supposedly liberal Democrats buying into the framework. American supremacists. Hey, man, look, I don't know what the problem is around the world, but the answer is more United States military action. That's the answer. So, and don't worry, it's cool because we're always on the right side, even when we're on the wrong side, because we just declare that we're on the right side. So when we arm Saudi Arabia and, you know, they call all atheist terrorists and don't let women drive and treat them as second-class citizens and behead people for drug smuggling and sorcery and apostasy and witchcraft and implement a literal ultra-conservative interpretation of Sharia. We believe in human rights. Well, why are you supporting the number one regime on the planet that does not? We believe in human rights, American supremacy, American exceptionalism. We're better, so whatever we do is okay. So when we say we're at war for 8 years, it's not like if you say you're at war for 8 years. If you say it, you're a savage. If we say it, we're the enlightened liberators of the world. The same goddamn tricks every empire in human history ever did, and a bunch of people fall for it. If you fall for it, I feel bad for you. I do. How naive are you? Like, how, really? That's, you haven't figured any of this out yet? You haven't, like, looked at it with a critical eye? You haven't gone, oh, look at that. We support many human rights abusing regimes, so maybe our prime motivator in foreign policy is not human rights. Maybe it's business interests. Maybe it's corporations. Maybe it's natural resources. Maybe it's a power dynamic. Maybe it's control. Maybe it's imperialism. No, can't be that, because we're the good guys. We're the good guys. So when a room full of U.S. soldiers cheers when the president says, we've been at war for 8 years straight, two full terms, that's not a sign of moral decay at all. No. Actually, that's exactly what it is. Even the supposedly liberal Democratic presidents cheering for endless war. I got news for everybody. War is horrific, and it should be a last resort to defend the country from imminent attack. We've gotten rid of that, and now it's the opposite. Left is right, up is down, wrong is right, and 8 years at war is something to be super happy about. So that's where we're at now. And this is why we need a real left in America, to find the moral core of the country and drive home the principles and the ideals that are necessary in order to be good people. Vice sat down with former Speaker of the House, John Boehner, and he has some thoughts for us on the establishment.
It's really interesting when you sit back and look at what the so-called Tea Party is. I was the Tea Party before there was a Tea Party. And then all of a sudden I was the establishment. You know, I went to Washington to fight for a smaller, less costly, and more accountable federal government. They wanted the same thing. The only thing we disagreed on were tactics. You know, they were ready to burn the place down to accomplish what they wanted to accomplish. I thought burning the place down was probably not in the best interest of the party or the country.
This is now the second time that John Boehner has argued he's anti-establishment. I wasn't the establishment. I was anti-establishment. I was the Tea Party before there was a Tea Party. Let me tell you. Dude, who are you kidding? Who are you kidding? It's the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life. Okay, John Boehner is infamous for his corruption. I mean, he walked around the floor of Congress handing out checks from the tobacco industry to all the people who sold out to the tobacco industry. I'm not kidding. That's a real story.
I'm anti-establishment, except when I, take a lot of money from Big Tobacco and then hand out checks for other congresspeople who sell out to Big Tobacco also. But, you know, other than that, I'm anti-establishment. Really? Well, I went to opensecrets.org, which, of course, tracks corruption and money in politics. And you know what I found, John? Here, let me tell you. I found that you raised in your political career $72,767,977. What part of that is anti-establishment, you sweet bitch? What the fuck is wrong with you? Who says that? There's something weird about, you know, when the ultimate establishment figures try to, like, pull the wool over your eyes. I'm like, no, I'm hip. I'm with it. Tuck, 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 tuck. It's like when Chuck Schumer on the Democratic side is like, God, man, yeah, totally, bro, I support Keith Ellison for the DNC chair. You're going to overlook all of my establishment bullshit, right? No, we're not. You voted for the Iraq War, asshole. You fucking supported torture at one point. Not buying your nonsense. So, look, keep... Understand that you're going to have people who are enemies of the movement co-opt the language of the movement. And just keep everything in perspective. So, look, when Chuck Schumer says, hey, I'm going to support Keith Ellison for DNC chair, great, okay, I'll take it. But just understand that it's a cynical move. So I support – if more people are going to support Keith Ellison for DNC chair, great. I'll take it all. But just keep everything in perspective. Because you know who really is part of the movement and really is anti-establishment and who's just a wolf in sheep's clothing. So accept it. Accept the fact that more people, and he happens to have power, you know, he would support this good thing. But just remember exactly what's going on behind the scenes here and that it's a political move. This is the same thing with John Boehner. Oh, yeah, man, I'm totally Tea Party, anti-establishment, let me tell you. Anyway... I gotta go grab another check from the tobacco company and pretend that cigarettes don't cause cancer. Yeah, fuck off. Fuck you guys. So, there it is. The establishment itself is now claiming, us? Me? No, I represent, I'm anti-establishment. Okay. All right, let me do one more, and then we'll take our final break. Time for Alex Jones. Alex Jones dropped a bomb in a recent interview he did recently. Let's see what he had to say.
I happen to know for a fact, and people that are close to him, he is working 20, I actually worry about him at 70. He's such a Trojan, such a Herculean. 20 hours a day. When I talk to him, I'm not name-dropping, it just shows what he does on Friday lengthy conversation, less than 10 minutes, but it was almost 10 minutes long. It was a real conversation. He wasn't just patting me on the back. He had real questions. I had real comments. I had real things I was saying. And I said, sir, you're so busy, you probably have to go. And he goes, yeah, I am pretty busy. He started telling me, you're the 61st call I'm making today to thank folks, but I'm also getting all these other calls from kings and queens and world leaders. And you know what? It's so crazy. All of a sudden, now that I'm in, I'm the best guy in the world. So that is the good news. A lot of them that were saying he was the worst person in the world, they're saying he's great now. The problem is their surrogates that we know are financed by him are still attacking. And so I said, look, you can't trust these people. please press the attack because it's what you said you'd do. Plus, you know, they're never going to stop. And I'm not going to tell people what he said to that, but it was quite interesting.
Alex Jones is talking to the president-elect of the United States. I hope he's lying. I hope that's bullshit. I really, really hope that's bullshit. Because if Donald Trump has taken the time to talk to this guy, I mean, come on, man. This is a guy who believes everything is a conspiracy. Everything is a conspiracy. Every single thing you could think of. So, Sandy Hook. This is my favorite of the absolutely made-up conspiracies. Because what was their argument? Obama's, they're doing Sandy Hook using crisis actors and understand that the reason they're doing this is because they're going to come and take your guns. They're using it as a pretext, come and take your guns. So why didn't that happen? They set up this whole thing, and it was all elaborate, and then, oh, look, it didn't happen. No, they didn't come take your guns. They didn't do anything. There was zero gun reform. Zero gun reform. And every time there's a mass shooting or something like that, they always say, they're doing it, come take your guns, they're going to do. But they didn't take your guns. And by the way, Alex, you do know that we have, like, congressional records. So, for example, you can go back and see what were the things that were proposed in response to it. The furthest bills that were proposed, which didn't even fucking, I don't even think they came up for a vote because the Democrats caved immediately. But it was an assault weapons ban, which would still keep all the shotguns, all the rifles, and all the handguns in the goddamn country. There was an assault weapons ban, there was a high-capacity magazine ban, and there was a universal background check. So that was the proposals. That's as far as they went. But he's pretending they're going to come take your guns. They want to ban the Second Amendment, and they want to come take your guns. They're going to ban guns. Okay, but we know that's not true. And by the way, the only bill that came up for a vote was the Manchin-Toomey background check bill, which is a watered-down background check bill. And that didn't even pass. So, Alex, do you understand your whole fucking theory falls apart because the motive that you said was the reason doesn't exist? They're going to come take your guns, but they didn't take your guns. It's like, oh, Obama, they were black helicopters, FEMA camps, are going to come take your money, put them in FEMA camps. Did that happen? You said Obama's going to do it. Obama doesn't have much time left in office, does he? What's he waiting for? What's going to happen? When Obama leaves office without putting people in FEMA camps, I need your punk ass to come out and say, you know what? I was dead wrong. Proof is in the pudding. I ain't in a FEMA camp, bitch. But you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it because you're a fucking hack. Agenda 21.
UN's going to take over everything. They're going to ban golf courses and ban cars.
Do you have a car? I still have a car. There's a golf course very close to me. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. It's still happening.
They're going to ban it. They're going to ban Agenda 21. Everybody's going to be in a hobbit home.
But that didn't happen. That did not happen. That did not happen. That did not happen. So please, I need you to come out and say, you know what? I was dead wrong, and everybody needs to know I was dead wrong, and don't fucking trust me because apparently everything I say is bullshit. So, Alex, know your role. Your role is you've been perpetually wrong, and you don't own up to it. If I made one-tenth the bad predictions Alex Jones made, I would be too embarrassed to do a show anymore. I'd be like, you know what? This isn't for me. I obviously don't know what the fuck I'm doing. But furthermore, it goes deeper than that. So Alex Jones, anti-establishment himself.
Oh, yeah, the Illuminati, the Bilderbergs and all this.
Well, you're anti-establishment, but now you're one of the biggest dick suckers of the president-elect of the United States. I believe that is the definition of the establishment. Now you are the establishment. And by the way, Alex, you want to tell me what you think of Goldman Sachs being the Treasury Secretary and being in charge of the fucking budget. Tell me what you think of that. Tell me what you think of the guy who took over a bank and then foreclosed on senior citizens. Tell me how that fits into your revolutionary fought for the people mentality. Because this is who Trump picked. And Trump picked Steve Mnuchin for Treasury Secretary. Tell me how you feel about Jeff Sessions. Did you know Alex Jones calls himself a libertarian? Then how the fuck do you support Donald Trump? Donald Trump on social issues is the opposite of a libertarian. He's super authoritarian on social issues. And on economics, he's protectionist when it comes to trade deals, which, by the way, I agree with, and I give him credit for that stuff. But you're a libertarian. You're supposed to hate protectionism. You're supposed to hate it. You're supposed to love free trade deals. So he represents the opposite of your ideology, but you latched onto him. You latched onto his personality. Because you, ironically, are a beta male. Isn't that curious? All the people who fucking listen to Alex Jones and cuck, cuck, you're a cuck, cuck, I'm beta male, but oh, you're not alpha. Look at this guy. Genuflected the altar of power because Daddy Trump has a personality and gave Alex Jones the time of day. He spoke to me, phenomenal bitch, carry his water endlessly. Well, what happened, big guy? You said you were a libertarian. He does not represent a libertarian philosophy, so now all of a sudden, you're not a libertarian. Now all of a sudden, I'm so anti-establishment that I support the establishment, the president-elect of the United States, who's now picking Goldman Sachs. Hey, what happened? I thought you thought Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden were heroes. You do know that the guy Trump picked for CIA head said we should execute Edward Snowden. Got anything to say about that? Jeff Sessions, Mr. Libertarian Alex Jones, right? Jeff Sessions said good people don't smoke marijuana. He called a white civil rights attorney a traitor to his race. You don't have anything to say about this, do you, Alex? No, of course you don't, because you're a fucking silly person. And the final point I'll make here is, hey, jackass, I don't know how anybody can listen to you when you say things like, Trump is working 20-hour days. He's working 20-hour days, Alex. That's what he's doing. He's working 20-hour days. No, he's not. No, he's not. No, he's not. No, he's not. That's not even humanly possible. 20-hour days every day. You work for 20, you sleep for 4. Work for 20, sleep for 4. No eating, you know, no resting. Okay, I just... Wake up, guys. Wake up, guys. The people... Oh, yeah, this is a good guy who's anti-establishment and fighting for the people. Really? That's what you think of Alex Jones? Do I need to dig up the clips of him talking about how fucking Obama is literally demon-possessed to show that he's just unbelievably, colossally full of shit? And it's potential. I mean, look, I don't know if he's lying or he's not lying, but either way, it concerns me that there's a chance the president-elect of the United States is listening and talking to this maniac. Okay. All right, Rick Santorum. Let's go to this story. Oh, shit. Wait, no, I can't. Did I take a break yet? Did I take my final break? Why am I blanking on random fucking straightforward things? Yeah, sorry. Let me take my final break, and then when we come back, we'll get to Rick Santorum, and we'll get to Pat Robertson, who defended the pick of Ben Carson to lead the Department of Housing and Urban Development. All right, stay right there, guys. Dirty road, started out,
don't make me slap you with the left. You will fake, so I'm gonna slap you with the left. I feel like I'm the left.
All right, we're back. Social media lit up after Rick Santorum got into a back and forth with a dreamer on CNN. Let's watch.
Elizabeth Dulcis, she is in fact a young dreamer, and she's got a question for you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me, first of all, and for letting me be part of the discussion. Growing up here in America, one thing I always heard was that there was a shortage of individuals who entered careers in science, engineering, and technology, and so I decided to be part of the solution. I actually earned a degree in mechanical engineering. I have a career in the technology sector, and I've spent almost a decade working with students, getting them to focus on entering careers in engineering. And I stand to lose all the work that I've done if the new administration decides to end DACA, which is the program that allows undocumented individuals like myself to have the ability to work. It's not an immigration status, it's just the ability to work. I will lose my career. My career will come to an end if that program ends, and I will also potentially be labeled for deportation, which means that I'm going to be removed from the communities that I contribute to so much. And so as 2017 starts, I'd like to ask for your advice. How would you advise somebody like me for planning my future and what lays ahead?
My own personal story is my father came to this country when he was 7 years old. And the reason he came when he was 7 years old is because he wasn't allowed to come here.
Wait, how old
until he was 7 years old.
I was seven.
So, he was 7 years old.
Right. So, and he wasn't allowed to come because there was a law in place that he couldn't come. My grandfather was here and spent the first 7 years living in America, working in America, but was not allowed to be with his family because of the immigration laws at the time. And I remember asking my father how, and he was in Mussolini's Italy. Not a very, very, very pleasant place to be. And I remember asking him, and he hated Italy because it was a horrible childhood in his mind. And I asked him, I said, you know, did you ever resent America? He said, no, America was worth the wait. It was worth doing it the right way. And I think what most people in America feel is that you've been given a tremendous benefit by being here in this country. You just described something that I don't know where you've come, what country that your parents came from. But my guess is you wouldn't have had the opportunities to be able to accomplish what you have. My final point is you have the ability to go to any other country right now and apply those wares and
so,
be successful,
I mean, so
and then reapply to come back to America if you so choose.
Senator,
can I answer you?
Sure.
First of all, this is your country. No matter what he says, no matter what anybody else says, this is your country. And I, as an American,
not what the law says.
I, as an American, thank you for the contributions you are making to our joint country.
You know what the crazy thing is? That's Rick Santorum making his position more liberal. Because usually he'd say, no, I'm just going to deport you, and that's the end of the conversation, and there's no coming back. Here he's saying, leave and then come back. So this is him like, that's liberal Rick Santorum. But I need you to understand how silly that is because this is, you know, that's somebody who's an ideologue right there. So in other words, in his mind, illegal immigrant, end of conversation. No, but Rick, that's not the end of the conversation. So if you're talking about somebody who came in this country, who she's in the DACA program, like she said, and she's a hard worker, she has a high level of skill, and she's very productive for the country, but your response is still, no, illegal immigrant, end of conversation. Why is it the end of conversation, though? Why is she, in your eyes, in the same position as, you know, somebody who's a fucking, who comes in the country from Honduras and became a gangbanger? Like, this is the aspect of the Republican Party that's mind shut off, married to this position, even when the position makes no goddamn sense. Because, and then they'll get mad when people respond to them, hey, man, maybe that's like a bigoted position of yours.
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean it's not bigoted? It's not bigoted!
Except she happens to be, you know, this young Mexican girl who basically is laying out this flawless resume of how productive she is and how much she loves the country and how good she's doing and productive, would-be, great tax-paying citizen. Leave, come back, something, I don't know. Yeah, but this is the exact kind of person where there needs to be a deal made for them to stay in the country. Look, man, I'm not an open border anarchist, okay? I get the fact you got to have a border because I believe, as the old saying goes, you can either have no welfare state and no border or a welfare state and a border. So I'm a fan of the welfare state, so there should be a border. And it's fine to control the flow of immigration. Any country does that. There's nothing inherently bigoted about that. Where I start to facepalm and go, maybe something's up with your position, is when they go as far as saying, even the people who are here who are hardworking Americans who do the right thing, well, they're not Americans, but hardworking people who are doing the right thing, we don't want to make them Americans. That's when I go, wow, why? 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 What's your argument there?
The laws.
Okay, but, you know, jaywalking is against the law. Like, that's, to say it's against the law, that's not like an inherently, like, oh, got him. It's like fucking smoking marijuana is against the law. When I hear lock somebody up for that, I go, no! What, deport somebody for that? No, that's stupid. Yeah, so if you have somebody who's here, who's busting ass, working hard, incredibly productive, high skill set, and, you know, they want to be a citizen, and you say no just because laws, yeah, I got to question your motive, because that's not a rational, intelligent position to take. This is like the Steve Bannon quote that we discussed recently, where even Trump was to the left of him on immigration, because Steve Bannon said, look, there's a lot of high-skilled, like, Indian CEOs in Silicon Valley. And he says, well, you know, economic productivity is not the only thing. We're trying to create a civil society. So in other words, yeah, get the darkies out of here. Get the darkies out of here, and even if that affects our economy in a massively negative way, who cares? Even if that affects the revenue to the government in a massively negative way, who cares? No, you should care. And also you should look at this through the spectrum of basic humanity. I get it. If somebody's a criminal, yeah, fine, go ahead, deport them. Whatever. that's Obama's position too. But When you treat somebody like this, who's obviously a good person and who's doing the right thing, and you basically say, get out of the country and then maybe come back, you just expose yourself as a callous prick because you are that. And then the final thing is, dude, aren't you the Jesus guy? Rick Santorum's built his whole career on Jesus, 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 God, God, Bible, Christianity, Christianity, Christianity. Have you read the Bible on the issue of immigration? We've read the different, you know, passages here on air, and it is ridiculous. It's the most liberal you could possibly get on immigration. They, like, treat the sojourner like they're one of your own, open up your house to them. Like, it's just as lib as it gets on that issue. So apparently Rick Santorum, he's a Bible literalist. He believes in the Word. He believes in Jesus. Unless it happens to be an issue where Jesus is seemingly in bed with the so-called far left, in which case, that's inconvenient, so I'm going to ignore that. Who would Jesus deport? That's my question for you, Rick Santorum. Okay. All right, now we go to Pat Robertson. Robertson defended the pick of Ben Carson to lead the Department of Housing and Urban Development. This is hilarious.
You know, unqualified, we have a president whose only qualification was he's a community organizer. He never held a job in the private sector.
And a senator.
He learned his organizing skills from a well-known radical who had a handbook for revolutionaries. He went to the Senate where he did, as far as I can tell, next to nothing. He made a tremendous speech in front of the Democrat convention, and that catapulted him into the presidency. That was it. And now we've got a man who is a brilliant neurosurgeon who knows intimately the problems of the inner cities, is well qualified to take care of this. And when you get right down to it, what HUD, the thing with HUD is that they loan a lot of money to people. They guarantee loans for folks to build housing projects, and what they do is pretty good. But you don't have to micromanage that one. But if you have a concern about what part of the country needs help and where they can have some affordable housing, then Ben Carson's the man. But to say that he's not qualified compared to the – I mean, Bernie Sanders didn't take a paycheck. He was a bum. He didn't have any income at all. I think he was 30 years old. And then the only job he got was working for a city. And most of these Democrats have never been in the private sector in their lives. So who's qualified?
Why would being in the private sector make you qualified to be the head of the housing and urban the Department of Housing and Urban Development? You're like, oh, a Democrat never been in the private sector in their lives, so who's qualified? Well, yeah, if you were in the private sector, you'd be qualified for the private sector. Bernie Sanders got no experience. He's a bum. By the way, says the guy who's on TV begging for money to spew Christian bullshit at you 24/7. You can talk about other people being a bum when your entire life you've just been fucking conning people. And by the way, Bernie Sanders, I don't know. He's been a mayor. He's been a congressman. He's been a senator over 30 years. He's not qualified, except he's the most qualified person to do anything in government ever. I'm Pat Robertson. By my holy water. Like, it's like they're not even trying to make sense. He rails against Obama. Obama, we're talking about qualifications. He was just a community organizer. And a senator. And by the way, qualifications. Donald Trump has never held a government position in his entire life. We're talking about qualifications. The dude went bankrupt 6 times, because that's Pat, when you say, oh, he's never held a government position, that's when he'll say, oh, he's got private sector experience, though. Okay, number one, that doesn't mean dick when it comes to being in the government. Number two, he went bankrupt 6 times. So his experience in the private sector is bad. So, like, you're going to rant about qualifications. You're defending the president, a president, who went bankrupt 6 times, was a reality show star, never held a government position. That guy, cool. The neurosurgeon, who's going to be the head of the Department of Housing and Urban Development. To qualify, you can do surgery on a brain, you know about housing, basic logic. I forget to do the hunched over one up here. I'm Pat Robertson. I have the best posture in the world. You're going to defend those guys, but Obama, who was not only a community organizer, which is perfectly relevant to being in public life in terms of experience, and a senator, unqualified. Bernie Sanders, who's been in government for over 30 years, is not qualified to be in government? Mayor, senator, I can't. I don't even know why I'm bothering to do these segments anymore. I mean, he's obviously just a goofy-ass weirdo. So there you have it. Pat Robertson defending his Christian brethren. By the way, that's really why he's defending them, because he's, you know, Ben Carson's a hardcore Republican, and he's also massively, massively Christian and actually believes it. Like, he's with Pat Robertson in the, you know, I've fallen for it, I've totally drunk the Kool-Aid. And what did he say? He said the pyramids are grain silos from the Bible. No evidence of that. He's got a picture in his house of him and Jesus. Ben Carson does. He's a Seventh-day Adventist. They believe, like, Jesus was coming back, or there was going to be some big event, some apocalypse event or something, in, like, the 1800s, and it didn't happen. And now there are people who are still Seventh-day Adventists. Okay, but this your thing was wrong. I don't know, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist. But then, what does that mean? It was wrong. You predicted something that didn't happen. It's like you're in a cult, they say apocalypse is coming, it doesn't come, and then, you know, a year later, you're like, yeah, I'm with them. But they, what? Who can say that and not be embarrassed? These guys. And I love that, I forget who said this, but somebody said, Ben Carson, proving that the stereotype of neurosurgeons being geniuses is not true. Oh, it's true. Okay. Learning to fly. All right. So Lilith was telling me during the break that we got some shitty audio today. This mic is not working. So I'm going to figure something out. We'll switch it up in the next, I don't know how long, next week or so, maybe 2 weeks. I'll figure something out that will improve it. Thinking about maybe doing the super high-quality audio that you hear on YouTube when you listen to the show. I'll talk to some people and find a way to, you know, either have this for the live show or do it so that, you know, the live show is recorded and then immediately after it, like 5 minutes after it, it's put up there. And so it's the super high-quality audio and everybody gets a high quality and there's no more low quality. I'll figure it out. Another thing to add to the list of issues with new studio and new things. All right. Let's go to a story about a Weather Channel badass owning climate science deniers. Kate Parker is a host and apparently a scientist on the Weather Channel, and she absolutely obliterated Breitbart over climate change. Now, the reason why she's even bothering to talk about this is the House Science Committee tweeted a Breitbart article that's just nonsense. Anti-scientific garbage about how climate change isn't real. So let's see what she had to say. This is good stuff.
So last week, Breitbart.com published an article claiming that global warming was nothing but a scare and global temperatures were actually falling. Problem is, they used a completely unrelated video about La Nina with my face in it to attempt to back their point. Now, what's worse is that the U.S. Committee on Space Science and Technology actually tweeted it out. Here's the thing. Science doesn't care about your opinion. Cherry-picking and twisting the facts will not change the future, nor the fact, note fact, not opinion, that the Earth is warming. So let's break it down. Their first claim is that global land temperatures have plummeted by 1 degree Celsius since the middle of this year, the biggest and steepest fall on record. Now, that was based on one satellite estimate of global land temperatures, not a consensus. And second of all, land temperatures aren't an appropriate measure. The Earth is 70% water, and water is where we store most of our heat energy. So when you look at sea surface temperatures and you combine that with land temperatures, you actually get a record high for November of 2016. Their second claim, it can be argued that without El Nino, 2014 to 2016 would not have been record warm years. Now, you're taking a look at the Arctic sea ice melting here in this video from NASA. When you actually normalize the data, aka take out the El Nino spike in temperatures, 2015 and 2016 still come in as the warmest years on record. So that brings me to claim number three. Many think that 2017 will be cooler than previous years. Now, it is typical, yes, for temperatures to drop in a post-El Nino environment, but certainly not to record lows. If that claim was correct, we would have had global record lows all over the last century. We haven't seen that since 1911. The last time we fell below the 20th century average was in 1976, and guess what? That was directly following the 1974-1975 strong El Nino. So next time you're thinking about publishing a cherry-picked article, try consulting a scientist first. And to all my fellow scientists out there, let's make the facts louder than the opinions.
Yeah, she just put her boot in your ass. Okay, look, man, this is what happens when people who have a political agenda run up against people who actually care about the empirical reality and the data. And it's always been hilarious to me that the people who are in the climate change is a hoax camp try to claim that it's the scientists with the political agenda, showing they know nothing about science. Because think about it, who has a vested interest in pushing the climate change as a hoax narrative? The oil companies. Because the oil companies make a lot of money, and if we do anything to fight climate change, they're going to make a lot less money.
So what do? They hire, in many cases, the same people who push the idea that smoking doesn't cause cancer. Those same junk scientists, they say, oh, yeah, come do research for us about this. And then they put out these, you know, bullshit arguments about how, oh, the climate's not warming and it's all good. Again, many of them the same people who said cigarettes don't cause cancer, and they said it in fucking congressional hearings. So they should have their reputations destroyed, but they're right back getting paid a lot of money to make bullshit claims. But here's the really nefarious part of it. All you have to do, all they have to do to effectively win the argument in terms of stifling change is to keep insisting it's a debate. So as long as they keep saying, nope, 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 well, then we drag our feet on climate change and we don't take drastic measures and push really hard to go in the right direction. So, but that's why this is, it's so important what she's doing here, because Kate Parker is basically exposing these frauds for what they are. And you know, a lot of people who make these arguments are either useful idiots of the oil companies or they're liars and they're in on it. They're in on the scam. But I can assure you the conspiracy is not on the side of the scientists. I've said this before on air. I have a cousin who used to work in the U.S. He's a scientist, and they make nothing. Like, they're like, oh, these scientists are trying to get big grant money. Those grants are nothing. Like, you're not going to be rich. You're not going to be anywhere near rich. You'll be lucky if you can sustain on these grants. So that's where the conspiracy is, not with the fucking oil companies who pay these scientists who've already been discredited to push bogus arguments. It's just, like, I'm so sick of the shitty fucking arguments, and that's what it is. It's just shitty arguments all day long. So, Kate Parker, fantastic job there. Keep up the great work. And she's right. All the other scientists, come on. Let's wake up here and let's do exactly what she just did. And say, no, you're wrong, and here's why you're wrong, and this isn't even a debate. So if you say anything, I'm going to need you to www.shutoff.org. Okay. All right, I got one more, but don't really have enough time to do it. So we're going to wait for tomorrow. All right, guys, I love y'all. We'll see you soon. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. You know the deal. Everybody enjoy the rest of your day. I'm out. Peace.